Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Heritage Wealth Advisors quarterly market update and outlook conference call. This is Jay Jordan, the Chief Investment Officer for Heritage. With me, I have Jack Kasperzak, our Director of Research, and Carrie Baronian, our Senior Investment Analyst, who will be leading us in a conversation today to review both 2017 as well as give our outlook as we move forward. A couple of housekeeping items before we get started. First, at the conclusion of the call, certainly there'll be plenty of time for questions, and we'll give instructions at that point. Also, as a reminder, this call is being recorded. I also want to let everyone know as a save the date announcement that we will be having an event on Wednesday, February 21st at the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts to discuss both markets as well as, importantly, the recent tax legislation and the impact that has not only on the markets but specifically on individuals as well. So keep that in mind, and there will be more information to follow. So with that, I'm going to turn the call over to Jack Kasperzak.
Thank you, Jay. Good morning, everyone. And I'd, too, like to add my thanks for taking the time to join us this morning. We're going to go ahead and get started with our formal remarks. As Jay said, we're going to have Q&A at the end of the call. Please wait for instructions at that time. I'm going to turn the call over to our senior analyst, Carrie Baronian, who's going to give us some overview of the markets.
Thanks, Jack. 2017 was a very big year for stocks, up a little more than 1% in December. The S&P 500 posted, for the first time in a single calendar year, a positive return in each month of 2017, ending with a cumulative gain of nearly 22%. This combination of strength and consistency is very unusual, as the stock market typically generates a negative return in 4 or 5 months out of a calendar year. We continue to press forward in the second longest bull run in stock market history. It has been nearly 9 years since the last bear market, which is measured as a 20% decline. The worst correction in 2017 was less than 3%. Compared to the historical average, this was just a minor bump in the road. On average, the max drawdown, which is defined as a peak-to-trough decline, the average for a calendar year is 10%. Such strong, steady performance may have some investors thinking the current environment is reminiscent of previous bubbles. 2017 was a year when taking risk paid off significantly. Equities moved higher on the back of accelerating global growth. From an asset class return perspective, emerging market equities were the top performers, notching an impressive gain of nearly 38%. Emerging markets are now through a 4-year earnings recession, and their profit outlook has improved meaningfully. Some of the same economic spark pushed international developed market equities to a 27% gain, followed by the S&P 500 at 22%. Small-cap stocks marked time for much of the year, but gathered momentum when Congress passed new tax legislation, posting a 15% total return. Relative to large multinational businesses, small domestically-oriented firms pay a higher effective tax rate and therefore stand to benefit more from the reduction in the corporate tax rate. Within fixed income, returns were generally positive. Fears over rising interest rates did not materialize, and the yield on the 10-year Treasury remained below 2.5%. Regarding cash, money market funds continued to yield almost nothing, extending the hunt for yield and boosting the performance of REITs and other high-yield investments. As it relates to the dollar, the greenback weakened during the period, which came as a surprise to many investors. While interest rate differentials support a stronger dollar, accelerating growth outside the U.S. is attracting capital, which appears to be putting downward pressure on U.S. currency. Positive performance was pervasive, but there was wide divergence across S&P sectors. Technology stocks turned in a stellar year with a total return of nearly 39%. Much has been made of the strength of the FANG stocks and many other large tech companies. For example, semiconductor stocks like NVDA had a very strong year, but money was also made in materials, financials, and healthcare. Energy and telecom lagged all year, but energy stocks rebounded toward the end of the year, finishing the year with just a 1% decline. Excess oil inventories finally began to burn off, and the price of crude finished the year above $60 a barrel, after having hovered in the 40s during the second and third quarters. The sector seems to be poised to carry its momentum into 2018, with global growth fueling a rebalancing of supply and demand. With that, I'll turn the call back over to Jack.
Thanks, Carrie. The economic cycle and the stock market are inextricably linked, and so we usually discuss them together because bear markets and recessions tend to coincide with one another, with stocks typically leading the way down into an economic contraction. For now, there is little sign of recession. If anything, economies both here and abroad are gaining strength. As is often stated in the media, we are in the midst of a synchronized global economic recovery. The Global Purchasing Manufacturers Index, or PMI, an indicator of the health of the manufacturing sector, hit a 7-year high in December. Global leading economic indicators, things like the stock market, housing activity, retail sales, and new business, as is industrial production. Manufacturing activity is improving in nearly all major economies. Eurozone, in particular, stands out with the highest PMI, and its three largest economies, Germany, France, and Italy, all showing marked improvement during 2017. Yes, you heard it right. I did say France and Italy. Manufacturing activity in the U.S. is at a 13-year high. Small business optimism is at its second highest level on record. Factory orders are up 6.5%, and the unemployment rate stands at 4.1%. Fourth quarter economic growth in the U.S. is likely to be over 3%, with December marking 102 consecutive months of expansion. The average expansion has been 47 months. Odds are that this current economic expansion in the U.S. will end up being the longest in history. Global economic strength is driving an improved earnings outlook. Both in developed markets and emerging markets, earnings have surged and are well off their cycle lows. There was a period of softness in global earnings that began sometime in early 2015. Earnings in the developed markets and emerging markets bottomed at about the same time, but emerging markets fell much farther, and emerging markets have now emerged from a 4 to 5 year earnings recession. Reforms put in place in recent years are bearing fruit, and a transition to consumer-driven economies, less dependent on cyclical sectors like energy and mining, continues in the emerging markets. That said, developed markets are about 20% above 2011 earnings levels, while emerging market earnings are still below where they were in 2011. This suggests to us continued room to run for emerging markets. What many people do watch as a harbinger of a recession is the yield curve, which is the difference between long-term interest rates, usually the 10-year yield, and short-term interest rates, usually the 2-year yield. Much discussion has occurred recently in the media over the flattening of the yield curve and whether this is signaling increased risk of recession. It is the case that an inverted yield curve, where short-term rates are higher than long-term rates, has often been a harbinger of a recession. However, as our friends at BCA Research point out, the risk occurs when the yield curve actually inverts, not when it is flattening, but still remains positive, as is the case today. Moreover, the current flattening of the yield curve is being driven by higher short-term rates as the economy has strengthened, which we view as a positive development. Historically, stock returns heading into a recession have been positive. This makes intuitive sense given it typically coincides with the latter stages in an economic cycle. where the economy is heating up or even overheating. The S&P 500 has returned 8% annualized in the 7 to 12 months prior to past recessions. And this performance has improved in recent business cycles with an average annualized return of nearly 19% 7 to 12 months before the last three recessions. President Trump signed into law the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act just before Christmas. This comprehensive piece of legislation contained material changes to both corporate and individual tax rates and provisions. The corporate tax rate was lowered to 21% from 35%, and there's a one-time repatriation tax of 15.5% for cash brought back into the U.S. Many large companies do not pay the statutory rate of 35% owing to overseas operations where tax rates are often lower and other provisions, for example, the expensing of research and development costs. The average tax rate for the S&P 500 is about 27%, so clearly a reduction to 21 is a material move lower for the tax rate. But not to the order of magnitude for small-cap, domestically-oriented companies that usually pay close to the 35% statutory rate. As progress toward tax legislation was being made in Congress, the stock market was bidding up stocks of high-tax companies, notably small-cap stocks. Earnings estimates are already being raised because of the tax law, and there will likely be more improvements to the outlook for corporate earnings in the coming weeks. Based on 2017 earnings and including the potential benefits of tax legislation, it appears to us that the S&P 500 earnings will be in the range of $145 to $150 a share this year, and this may be conservative. At the low end of this range, the index is trading at about 19 times earnings. After a long bull run, a persistent question centers around whether stocks are expensive. Is a 19 times price-to-earnings ratio on stocks too high? The 25-year average PE is 16 times earnings. Based on this measure alone, stocks appear somewhat expensive. Other metrics suggest stocks are even pricier. Take the CAPE ratio, so-called cyclically adjusted PE ratio, which is based on the average inflation-adjusted earnings from the previous 10 years. It's meant to smooth out cycles. The CAPE ratio, often cited in the media and by analysts, stands at 32.4 times, well above the 25-year average of 26.4 times. Moreover, on a price-to-book value or price-to-cash flow basis, stocks are similarly trading above their long-term averages, but not by wide margins. There are some observations about valuation that we think are critically important. First, while stocks are above their long-term average, it is also clear that over a long span of time, stocks tend to stay above the average for extended periods. That is to say, the average is pulled down by the sharp declines during bear markets, but these episodes, while dramatic, tend to be short-lived. Second, valuation by itself does not necessarily tell us that stocks are about to decline. The PE ratio in March of 2000, right before the tech boom, was 27.2 times. But the PE ratio in October 2007, right before the great financial crisis, was 15.7 times. Third, the economic context must be considered when evaluating stock valuations. Currently, we enjoy low inflation and low interest rates, which serve to support valuations both in terms of alternative investment choices and the discount rate on stocks. Valuation levels do inform us that the prospects for future returns are lower when valuations are higher. Over a one-year time horizon, stocks can perform well, even from above-average valuations. But when the horizon is extended to 5 years, prospective stock returns are more modest. The current environment does not seem to be as exuberant as some recent market cycles, notably the dot-com and housing bubbles. When viewed through a gauge called the risk ratio, the risk ratio measures the value of risk assets, think stocks, corporate bonds, mortgages, and bank loans, assets people buy for greater return potential when they are more aggressively positioned, relative to or divided by safe haven assets like cash and government bonds, places people go when they are fearful. Even with the stock market making new highs, this ratio is nowhere near the euphoric levels of those aforementioned bubble peaks. The primary risk to markets may be that the economy is too strong and ultimately overheats. As mentioned, the unemployment rate stands at 4.1%. Wage growth has been sluggish, and so inflation has remained benign and interest rates have remained low, but there has historically been a lag from when employment improves to when wage growth starts to pick up. A close relationship exists between manufacturing activity, which, as discussed earlier, is improving both here and abroad, and inflation, with the lag between the two at about 18 months. There are factors that could affect this relationship. Technology has clearly made an impact on efficiency and ability to do more with fewer people. Labor participation rates have been historically low as well, but there is evidence that participation rates are rising, and this will further tighten the economy. The Federal Reserve has started the process of tightening monetary policy by raising interest rates. Thus far, the interest rate increases have been in the context of a strengthening economy and a normalization of policy. Were inflation to accelerate, the Fed would likely raise interest rates more aggressively with negative effects on the economy and therefore the stock market. Regarding our outlook for 2018, we would make the following points. Market volatility has been historically low, but we think volatility is being influenced by the lack of variability in the economic data. Inflation and interest rates are low and have remained contained. Economies all over the world are improving, and earnings are not only trending up, but they have continued to surprise Wall Street. Simply put, there is no sign of recession. If anything, economic fundamentals are improving. Given this, we are hard-pressed to be anything but constructive on the outlook for equities. International stocks in particular seem poised to have another good year. The gap in valuations between U.S. stocks and international stocks seems too wide to us. We do believe interest rates will break out out of the current range and likely press toward the 2.75 to 3% range. This leaves us a bit cautious on fixed income due to interest rate risk. That concludes our formal remarks. Thanks, everyone, and have a great day.